Young and old. I'm one of the latter. This is The House at Two Corners, written by A.A. Milne, and long a favorite of all of us, I think. Now, you may think that the people who are playing these parts are really Marionette and Andrew and Judy and Joel. But that really isn't true. Before they come out, I'd like to ask all of your children, and they're going to play right there, so you're going to get your feet stepped on. There will be a song, and we'd like you to join in on it. And Marionette will teach it to you. So if you can sit quietly and pay a lot of attention for about 20 minutes, you will get to see Winnie the Pooh. Now, as I said, these people may look like people you've seen around here, but actually, Marionette is Pooh Bear.
Hello?
And Judy is Piglet. And Joel is Eeyore the donkey. He's a little slow.
Hello.
And all of these characters are friends of the boy Christopher Robin.
Hi.
One day when Pooh Bear had nothing else to do, he thought he would do something. So he went round to Piglet's house to see what Piglet was doing. And to his surprise, he saw that the door was open, and the more he looked inside, the more Piglet wasn't there.
He's out! That's what it is! He's not in! I shall have to go a fast thinking walk by myself. Bother!
And while he waited for Piglet not to answer, he jumped up and tried to keep warm, and a hum came suddenly into his head, which seemed to him a good hum, such as is hummed hopefully to others.
The more it snows, tiddly-pum, the more it goes, tiddly-pum, the more it goes, tiddly-pum, on snow. And nobody knows, tiddly-pum, how cold my toes, tiddly-pum, how cold my toes, tiddly-pum, are grown. So what I'll do is I'll do this. I'll just go home first and see what the town is. Perhaps I'll put a muffler around my neck. And then I'll go see Eeyore and say to him.
He hurried back to his house, and his mind was so busy on the way with the hum that he was getting ready for Eeyore that when he suddenly saw Piglet sitting in his best armchair, he could only stand there rubbing his head and wondering whose house he was in.
Hello, Piglet. I thought you were out.
Yes, it's you, Pooh.
Oh, so it was. I knew one of us was.
He looked up at his clock, which had stopped at 11:05 some weeks ago.
Nearly 11 o'clock. You're just in time for a little snack.
And he put his head into the cupboard.
And then we'll go out, Piglet, and sing my song to Eeyore.
Which song, Pooh?
The one we're going to sing to Eeyore.
The clock was still saying 11:05 when Pooh and Piglet set out on their way a half hour later. The wind had dropped, and the snow, tired of rushing in circles trying to catch itself, now fluttered gently down until it found a place on which to rest. And in a little while, Piglet was wearing a white muffler round his neck and feeling more snowy behind the ears than he had ever felt before.
I was just wondering, how would it be if we went home now and practiced your song and then sang it to Eeyore tomorrow? Or the next day when we happen to see him?
That's a very good idea, Piglet. We'll practice it.
it now as we go along. But it's no good going home to practice it, because it's a special outdoor song which has to be sung in the snow.
Are you sure?
Well, you'll see, Piglet, when you listen. Because this is how it begins. The more snow... Tiddly what? Tiddly pum, I said. I put that in to make it more honey. The more it goes, tiddly pum, the more...
Did you say snow?
Yes, but that was before.
Before the tiddly pum?
It was a different tiddly pum. I'll sing it to you properly and then you'll see. Now, children, can you help me on this? Just to explain it to Piglet, because it's going to be Piglet's job to do the tiddly pum from now. So when I put my hand up like this, or my paw, will you say, tiddly pum? The more it snows, the more it goes, the more it goes, I'm snowing, and nobody knows. How cold my toes! How cold my toes! Ah, gross.
He sang it like that, which is much the best way of singing it. And when he had finished, he waited for Piglet to say that of all the outdoor hums for snowy weather he had ever heard, this was the best. But Piglet said,
"Oh, it isn't the toe so much as the ears."
By this time, they were getting near Eeyore's gloomy place, which was where he lived. And it was still very snowy behind Piglet's ears, and he was getting tired of it. And they turned into a little pine wood and sat down on the gate which led into it. And both of them thumping on top of the gate with pieces of sticks at proper places. And in a little while they felt much warmer and were able to walk again.
I've been thinking, and what I've been thinking is this. I've been thinking about Eeyore.
What about Eeyore?
Well, poor Eeyore has nowhere to live.
Yes, he has.
You have a house, Piglet, and I have a house. And all the children here have houses. And they are very good houses. And Christopher Robin has a house. And Owl, and Kent, and Rabbit have houses. And even Rabbit's friends and relations have houses or something. But poor Eeyore has nothing. So what I've been thinking is, let's build him a house.
That's a great idea! Where should we build it?
Build it here, just by this roof, out of the wind. Because this is where I thought of it. And we will call this Pooh's Corner. And we will build an Eeyore house with sticks at Pooh's Corner for Eeyore.
There's a heap of sticks on the other side of the wood. I've got them. Lots and lots, all piled up.
Thank you, Piglet. What you have just said will be a great help to us. And because of it, I could call this place Pooh and Piglet Corner. If Pooh Corner didn't sound better, which it does, being smaller and more like a corner. Come along.
The Christopher Robin had spent the morning indoors going to Astrodome back. And he had just got off the boat and was wondering what it was like outside when who should come knocking at the door but Eeyore.
Hello, Eeyore. How are you?
It's snowing still.
So it is.
And freezing.
Is it?
Yes. However, we haven't had an earthquake lately.
What's your name, Eeyore?
Nothing, Christopher Robin. Nothing important. I suppose you haven't seen a house or whatnot anywhere about.
What sort of house?
Just a house.
Who lives there?
I do. At least I thought I did. But I... all have houses.
But Eeyore, I didn't know. I always thought.
I don't know how it is, Christopher Robin. But what with all this snow and another, not to mention icicles and such like, it isn't so hot in my field about 3 o'clock in the morning as some people think it is. It isn't close, if you know what I mean, not so as to be uncomfortable. It isn't stuffy. In fact, Christopher Robin, quite between ourselves, and don't tell anybody, it's cold. myself. The others will be sorry if I'm getting myself all cold. They haven't got brains, any of them. Only gray fluff that's blown into their heads by mistake. And they don't think. But if it goes on snowing for another 6 weeks or so, one of them will begin to say to himself, Eeyore can't be so very much too hot about 3 o'clock in the morning. And then it will get about, and they'll be sorry.
Oh, Eeyore!
I don't mean you, Christopher Robin. Robin, you're different. So what it all comes to is that I built myself a house down by my little wood.
Did you really? How exciting!
The really exciting part is that when I left it this morning, it was there, and when I came back, it wasn't. Not at all very natural, and it was only Eeyore's house. But still, I just wondered.
Christopher Robin didn't stop to wonder. He was already back in his house, putting on his waterproof hat, his waterproof boots, and his waterproof Macintosh as fast as he could.
Did you? We'll go and look for it at once.
Sometimes when people have quite finished taking a person's house, there are one or two bits which they don't want and are rather glad for the person to take back, if you know what I mean. So I thought if we just went...
Come on!
And off they went hurriedly, and in a very little time, they got to the corner of the field by the side of the pine wood, where Eeyore's house wasn't any longer.
There! A stick of it left. Of course, I still have all this snow to do what I want with. One must explain.
Can't you hear it?
What is it? Somebody laughing.
Listen!
They both listened, and they heard a deep voice in a singing that the more it snowed, the more it went on snowing, and a small, high voice, teeny-tommy, in between.
It's Pooh!
Possibly.
And Piglet!
Probably. What we want is a trained bloodhound.
The words of the song suddenly changed.
We finished our house! It's a beautiful house! I wish it were mine! And Pooh! It's Christopher Robin! Right by the place where we got all those sticks from! Come on!
They climbed down their gate and hurried round the corner of the wood, Pooh making welcoming noises all the way.
Why, here is Eeyore!
Said Pooh when he had finished by being Christopher Robin, and he nudged Piglet, and Piglet nudged him, and they thought to themselves what a lovely surprise they'd got ready.
Hello, Eeyore!
Same to you, Pooh Bear, and twice on Thursdays.
Before Pooh could say,
why Thursday?
Christopher Robin began to explain the sad story of Eeyore's lost house. And Pooh and Piglet listened, and their eyes seemed to get bigger and bigger.
Where did you say it was?
Just here.
Mean skip?
Yeah. What?
You're sure it was a house? I mean, you're sure the house is just here?
Of course I am. No brain at all, some of them.
Why? What's the matter, Pooh?
Well, the fact is, you see,
Oh, we warmer?
What's warmer?
The other side of the wood where your house is.
My house? My house was here.
No, the other side of the wood.
Because of being warmer.
But I ought to know.
Oh, hey, look, there wouldn't be two houses not so close together.
Inside as well as outside.
Eeyore went inside and came out again.
It's a remarkable thing. It is my house and I built it where I said I did. So the wind must have blown it here. And the wind blew it right over the wood and blew it down here. And here it is as good as ever. In fact, better in places.
Much better!
It just shows what can be done by taking a little trouble. Do you see, Pooh? Do you see, Piglet? Brains first and then hard work. Look at it. That's the way to build a house.
So, they left him in it, and Christopher Robin went back to lunch with his friends Pooh and Piglet. And on the way, they told him the awful mistake they had made. And when they finished laughing, they all sang the outdoor song for snowy weather the rest of the way home. Piglet, who was not quite sure of his voice, putting in the tiddly comes again.
I know it seems easy, but it's everyone who can do it.
Oh, I thought it was
Is it as grand as a king and factor and all the other things you said?
Well, it's not as grand as a king.
And then, as Pooh seemed disappointed, he added quickly,
but it's grander than factors.
Could a bear be one?
Of course he could. I'll make you one.
And he took a stick and cut two on his shoulder and said,
arise, Pooty Bear. Most faithful of all my knights.
So Pooh rose and sat down and said,
thank you.
Which is the proper thing to say when you have been made a knight. Then he began to think of all the things Christopher Robin would want to tell when he came back to wherever he was going to. And how muddled it would be for a bear of very little brains to try and get them right in his mind.
So perhaps Christopher Robin won't tell me anymore.
And he wondered if being a faithful knight meant that you just went on being faithful without being told things. Then suddenly again, Christopher Robin, who was still looking at the world with his chin in his hand, called out,
who?
Yes?
When? Who?
Yes, Christopher Robin.
I'm not going to do nothing anymore.
Never again?
Well, not so much. They don't let you.
Who waited for him to go on, but he was silent.
Yes, Christopher Robin?
Who? When I'm not doing nothing, will you come up here sometime?
Just me?
Yes, Pooh.
Will you be here too?
Yes, Pooh, I will be here. Really. I promise, I will be.
Good.
Pooh, promise you won't forget about me ever? Not even when I'm 100?
How old shall I be then?
99.
I promise.
Still with his eyes on the world, Christopher Robin was out of hand and fell for Pooh's paw.
Pooh, I'm not quite. Pooh, whatever happens, you will understand, won't you?
Understand what?
Oh, nothing. Come on.
Where?
Anywhere.
I often wish I were a king, and then I could do anything. If only I were king of Spain, I'd leave my head out in the rain.
If I were ever king of France, I wouldn't brush my hair for hand.
Hello, Ed. Lunch today at 12. White. Right.
Hello? Hello, operator? I wanted Caledonia 5867, please. Oh, this is Caledonia 5867. Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm terribly sorry. I thought it was the operator. I've had so much trouble with this telephone lately. May I speak to Miss Lucille Webster, please? Oh, speaking? Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I didn't recognize your voice at first. First, I thought it was the operator, and then I thought it was someone answering for you, Lucille. Have you got a cold or something? I didn't recognize your voice. Well, you sound as though you had. There's been so much of it around this wretched weather. I never saw anything like it in my whole life. Well, I'm glad you haven't got a cold, though at first you certainly sounded like you did. Why, I was just talking to Ethel for just a second, and she had such a cold she could hardly talk. That's the reason I asked you. There's an awful lot of it around this wretched weather, and... Oh, nothing in particular. Oh. Silly of me, of course there was. I was so interested in what you were saying, Lucille, I completely forgot. Lucille, what are you doing tomorrow? No, about lunchtime. A little earlier, a little later, it doesn't really matter. I expect to be in your part of town around that time. Oh, around lunchtime, 1:30 or so. Let's see, I have an appointment at 12:30, and it oughtn't to take me more than half an hour. I'm sure I'll be through in half an hour, but anyway, I ought to be through by 1:30, and I could meet you anywhere you stay. Well, Mailer's is pretty crowded about that time. Isn't there some place nearer? Let's see, my appointment's on Madison. No, it's nearer Fifth, I guess. Oh, that doesn't matter. I'll take a cab if I can get one. My dear, did you ever see anything like how hard it is to get a cab these days? Last night I was 25 minutes trying to get one, and it made me late for dinner, and I know they didn't believe me. Well, it's only a block, and I guess a little exercise wouldn't hurt me. Mailer? Oh, how about the Ritz? No, there's such a jam there, and it's so hard to meet. Well, any place you say. Oh, Lucille, that's a dreadful place. The food's so, you know, so bad, if you know what I mean. Well, let's take a chance on Mailer. Only it is so crowded. No? No, I haven't heard that. No, no, I haven't read a thing in months. I don't know where the time goes. I swear, Lucille, I certainly don't know where the time goes anymore. Lucille, you're sure you've got tomorrow at lunch free? Because if you haven't, well, we can try again another time. Well, all right then. Suppose we say Mailer's. Oh, say, do you know the little tea shop? That one, I see it's on 47th between Park and Madison. Let's see, that's on the downtown. That would be the south side of the street. I'll be there by 1, or anyway by 1:30, and I'll get a table if I'm first, and you do the same if you are. Well, I ought to be there by 1. My appointment's 12:30, and it may only take me a few minutes. I might be there before 1, but certainly by 12:30. Well, all right then. Suppose we say about 1 at Mailer's. Oh, no, what am I thinking of? We decided that would be too crowded, didn't we? Well, unless you'd rather go there. Well, all right, I'd just as soon go to Maillard. It doesn't matter much. It's seeing you I care about. There's so much I want to talk to you about. These little snatches on the telephone are so unsatisfactory, if you know what I mean. Well, all right, let's go to Maillard's, and if we don't like the looks of things there, we can go somewhere else. All right, then, at Maillard's. Oh, let's go to the tea room. Well, all right then. I'm longing to see you, Lucille. Tomorrow, then, at the tea shop, that's on 47th between Park and Madison, on the downtown, that's the south side of the street. Oh. Well, now let's see, that's Wednesday, all right. It's what? It's Tuesday. Oh, you don't mean it. I can't go if it's Tuesday. I've had a luncheon appointment. I've had for simply weeks, and I don't dare postpone it again. And you can't make it Wednesday. Well, I'm terribly sorry. I'll try again. Ring me up. All right, let's see. I'll be in all afternoon. Let's see, until 5:30. And then I have to go downtown and... Yes? Well, I'm glad we had a nice little talk anyway. I'll see you soon. What? No, soon. S for Sam. Yes, soon. All right, Lucille. See you soon. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye.
Rather, he is seen as a traveling salesman who has had his eyes out for a sharp bargain, but also takes pride in satisfied customers along the eastern Mediterranean seaport. Lindy Lindstrom will play the part of Jonah.
Tarshish.
You don't say. I got a lot of friends there. It's beautiful thing.
Jimmy and look up a few old friends and patches.
Why not? It's a time. Hey, you can take passengers.
First class or tourists?
In the old days, when I was traveling for myself, nothing but first class for J.B. Amity.
But in this case,
one tourist. Single or return?
What's the matter with you?
Return, of course. I've got a wonderful little business waiting for me when I come back. A few days. I'll spend a few days here to build up my strength, and then I'll give a great shout against Nineveh. After all, it's tough territory. But they will spend a couple of days maybe. Ah, it's a beautiful day for sailing. Joy is asleep on a bale of goods. The sailor awakes.
Dave,
the wild
is at hand.
The wind has come over black all of a sudden. In all my years, I never knew a storm this time of year.
We found some patches?
Are you barmy? We've been stuck out here the past 5 hours, and all the wind does is try to blow us back. In all my years, I've never seen anything like it.
Very interesting phenomenon.
I say that in spite of, you know, it's about electricity in the atmosphere. And take the sea serpent, for example.
I will.
The sea serpent is really a big, big eel. Science built it.
I don't take any chances.
After I've tried every trick I know, I pray.
You too, son.
Well, today. So who cares if it's silly? When it comes to evening, I'll say my evening prayers.
Don't take no chances. Pray now.
Happened to a dog, it happened to me. Listen, God. Stop bugging me. Didn't I give you my word of honor? I will go to Nineveh. Ask anybody anywhere in these territories. Jonah's word is his bond. A gale begins to blow. Do me a favor just this once. I will catch the first boat from Tarshish to Nineveh. The very first boat. The gale blows stronger.
Did you make that sacrifice yet? We got all the passengers making sacrifices to all the different gods. That way we must get the right god sooner or later and we'll stop this storm. Governor, did you make the sacrifice yet?
All right. Yeah, I sacrificed it for you people, me five. I only ate a small portion of it.
All right, throw overboard with an appropriate prayer.
Dear God, and remember, the first boat from Tarshish.
What? sometimes I can't make you bump. You've got such a mysterious way to carry it on. So where's Tarshish? Tarshish? If I'm not there, if I'm not mistaken, if my memory serves me right, that great city of Christie says, Cinnabon. It happens to a Stonehenge has talked with the king and convinced him that the end of the world is coming 40 days. Right now he's sitting on a rock in the scorching sun. In the background, a celebratory background noise like a holding 4th of July. It happens to a dog, what happens to me. Here, after all of this, the king himself takes my personal word that in 40 days it will be the end of the world. And what happens? The 41st day is a national holiday. Government proclaims, and I am proclaimed, and I am the biggest bloody fool in the Midwest. I am a laughing stock. A laughing stock, that's all. I don't know. I am going to sit here like it is on the show. You can do whatever you like. You and your minima schmina. I'm finished. Yet 40 days, and minima shall be overthrown. Ha! That's your heads off. 3-4 hours, I won't do you no more. Don't do that damn bird either no more. I hate mice. Hey, what's this? By my life, it's a tree. A coconut with a patent zipper. It's great. Nice cold. Delicious. Well, this is certainly a novelty. Oh, I see Mrs. Zinkin has just got her 8th daughter. That's not good. Oh, and young Fibble is opening a cafe espresso bar on High Street. That's bad. That's Fibble, you know. He should do well. Say, it's like a summer holiday here. And believe me, I deserved it. It's certainly a wonderful place you made here, Lord. I gotta hand it to you. For land development, you're top.
Original poetry. Once there was a man by the name of Holden who looked for the rivers golden. He whipped his husky oxen up the trail and tunneled his mines in winter's biting gale. Steadily up he plodded along Railroad Creek with a buxom wife so mild and meek, looking, longing for that ore, for now A.J. Holden is no more. He picked away while his little wifey cried, "We have no money, and to you I am tied. And if we stay much longer, our bones will lay out on Dumbbell Mountain with the rocks so gray." So they packed their bags and headed down the hill to Lucerne town so quiet and still. When the Lady of the Lake came in view, Holden's wife was still in a stew. Holden quietly stole away, and no one knows where his bones do lay. His heir sold out to Howe Sound, while A.J. Holden sleeps in the ground. But Holden Town is here to stay, for guests to come and watch and pray. History is lost in the sands of time, even though this poem may not rhyme. Here I am again. Soon this bus will roll away. The time has come this sad day to say goodbye. My friend is leaving on this bus today. There is love in my heart that will not die. Soon this bus and my friend will be gone. An empty bus will return to this familiar place. In my heart there will be a lonely song, but we will meet again in some happy place. Now I walk the empty street, memories will linger of my happy friend, who gave me a smile when we would meet, but there is a promise, we will meet again. Now there was only an empty spot, the bus pulled away, but memories linger so loud and strong, all I can do for my friend is silently pray, and go back to my work with a thankful song. Thank you, Lord, for the friend who gave me love, who left a message of love and light, the precious gift from heaven above, who helped me one dark, empty night. Now the bus has gone away. I walk the familiar streets again. As I move on, I still can pray for my friend out there in the world. Feel your kindling fire, your love and glorious power, to serve you be all my desire, with joyous hope in every hour. Oh, bring your cross before my eyes, as I go along life's way. Raise my spirit to the sky, and help me watch and pray. Help me to see your coming, Lord, that life is flying by, to be strengthened in your word, till your return is nigh. And when comes the weary tears, then lift my shaking hand to take away my useless fears, that in faith I ever stand. And when that glorious hour shall come, rejoicing till life's end, then take me to my heavenly home, my blessed Savior and my friend. Blessing to me. Thank you for his Christian love. Lord, I come to thank you. Lord, I will not forget the call you gave me now to help and love him in your love and cheer him along the way. Lord, help me pray for him to love in Christ more and more, that he will truly find joy and hope for all his life. Thank you, gracious Lord, that you gave him to me. Thank you again, Lord. He is a blessing to me. Lord, everywhere in this world we see lost in dreariness and sin, where'er the Christian flag is furled, where still there is no peace from sin. Oh Lord, the church seems tired and cold. The gospel to some is boring and dreary. There is no fire at the times of old when you seem close and near. The people faint and are bold. They give no thought to you. Lord, it seems that hearts are cold. We see that men must be born anew. Lord, we come upon this day. Inspire our hearts with the gospel fire, that we might help men along the way to live for you, be their desire. Oh, help us all to rise again, redeemed by the precious saving light, to free our hearts from guilt and sin, to praise your glorious name again. Lord, stir our hearts with zeal and fire your saving gospel to proclaim, that dying men might live again, free from the burdens that ensnare them. And when we are gathered in heaven above, to stand in our glorious heavenly home, we'll rest in our Savior's glorious love and sing our praise around the throne. Finally, I wrote this last one for those who must finally leave Holden, for myself, finally getting on the bus. And now I must leave this happy place, the rooms where once I laughed and played, and now return to life's busy race, and leave the chapel where I prayed. The mountains fading fast away, the bus rolls on and on. I am moving to another time and day. My time at Holden has swiftly gone. And now the Holden dock fades from view. The boat swiftly moves on and far away. The lake seems ever bright and new while I silently pray. My train moves on and on, far from my happy Holden land, but the smile of friendly faces lingers on that wave goodbye with each sad hand. This train rolls on and on, far from friends at Holden who gave their love, though they are far away and gone. We will meet someday in heaven above. Now as Holden fades fast away, my Savior goes with me still. He will always help me pray for Holden friends wherever they are.
Play called Luther. I wish we might have time and the ability to present all of it to you because it's a very good play. But tonight we're going to give just a small cutting from the play Luther. It is done by Bob Steelquist playing John Petzold, who has been commissioned by Rome to go into Germany and to sell indulgences to the German people. At the time of this scene, he is in a small provincial German town.
Are you wondering who I am, or perhaps what I am? Is there anyone out there among you tonight, any small child, any cripple or any sick idiot who hasn't heard of me and doesn't know why I'm here? Well, speak up then if there is.
What? No one? You all know me then? You all know who I am? If it's true, it's very good. Very good, and just as it should be. Just as it should be, and no more than that. However, just in case, mind, there is one blind, maimed midget out there among you tonight who cannot hear me, I will open his ears and wash them out with sacred soap. And as for the rest of you, I know I can rely on you all to listen patiently while I instruct him. Is that right? Can I go on? Is that right? Can I go on? I'm asking you, can I go on? Now, just what is this good word on this fine day? What is this news that you've all come to me for? Well, it's this.
Who is this friar with his red cross? Who sent him and what's he here for?
No, don't try to figure it out for yourself. Because I'm going to tell you now, this very minute.
I am John Tetzel, Dominican, inquisitor, and subcommissioner to the Archbishop of Mainz. And what I bring you is indulgences. Come, hold up the indulgences that everyone can see. Is there anyone so small that he can't see? Come forward, come forward. Now then, you're asking, what are indulgences, and what are they to me? What are indulgences? Why, they're only the most precious and noble of God's gifts to men, and that's all. Why, if anyone here committed any sin, I challenge anyone here to name one sin that I can't take care of with one of my little indulgences. If anyone so much as violated the Blessed Virgin Mary, Mother of God, he'd be saved as long as he bought one little indulgence. Ah, you think I'm fooling, don't you? Well, not so, because I come directly from Rome, from the Pope himself, to bring you these indulgences. Now then, if all you have is the very shirt on your back, then strip it off, that you too may obtain grace. And remember, these don't just apply for you, but for any relatives you have who have gone below. Yes, yes, my friend. One indulgence. One indulgence will take care of you for eternity. And rather than perish in the eternal flames, you can see the glory of the heavenly gate. Remember, as soon as the money rattles in the box and the cash bell rings, the soul flies out of purgatory and sings. Well, what is it? What's the matter? Have your wits flown away with your faith? Have you no reason? Listen then. Soon I shall take down this cross, and I shall shut the gates of heaven to each and one of you, each and every one of you. Now then, for as little as we think you can afford, you can have an indulgence. Now give! Give! Come forward and give! 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 You, sir! Give! 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 Give!
Haven't you got any sense of humor?
What's the matter? Haven't you got any sense of humor? There's at least one thing I would less rather have in the neighborhood than a gangster. And that one thing is a practical prankster. I feel that we should differ more sharply than Montagues and Catholics, or York and Lancaster. Me and a practical prankster. If there's a concentration camp in Limbo, that is the spot for which I nominate them. Not because I don't like them, but simply because I abominate them. The born practical prankster starts out in early youth by offering people a chair. And when they sit down, it isn't there. And he is delighted and proceeds to more complicated wheezes, such as tents and x-rays to see through people's clothes, and powders to give them inches, and sneezes. And his boutonniere is something that people get squirted in the eye out of. Their bets are what he makes apple pie out of. Then, as he matures, he widens his scope. And he is no longer content to present people with exploding cigars and chocolate creams with centers of soap. So he dresses up as an Oriental potentate and reviews the British fleet. Or collects a small group of kin spirits, a few pickaxes, a street clothes sign, and digs up a busy street. And if people are jumpy about their past or present private lives, he hints that he's writing his memoirs and is devoting an entire chapter to their particular skeleton. He reaches the apex of his career when he slips into somebody's bathroom and fills all the modern conveniences with water and then adds raspberry gelatin. I have recently, with complete satisfaction, read of a practical prankster, two of whose friends had just been married, which was, of course, in itself, simply a challenge to be harried, and it was a challenge he was eager to meet. So he went up to the roof of their hotel and tied a rope around his waist, and a colleague lowered him to where he could clash a pair of cymbals right outside the window of the nuptial suite. And he weighed 280 pounds. And rope broke. And that, to my mind, is the perfect practical joke.
Has long been a favorite of the theater. It was first performed at the Barrymore Theater in 1951 with Jessica Tandy and Hume Cronin. And it's just as fresh today in the intricacies of marital relations as it was then. In telling his story of a 25-year marriage, Mr. de Hartog passes over none of the standard moments of fear, pathos, and unconscious comedy. The play begins with Michael carrying Agnes over the threshold and into the bedroom. In the second scene, a year later, Michael must run for the family doctor. In the third scene, which we will present tonight, 10 years later, Michael is prevented from losing his head over another woman. Our actors tonight are Annette and Len Lindstrom. It runs in the family.
You with presents.
Well, I like that.
Calmly. You know what I should have done? I should have packed you off to boarding school, big as you are, to learn deportment.
Deportment?
to be worthy of me.
The pompous act whose book sold 300,000 copies.
That is entirely beside the point.
That is right, too, Paul. Up until you wrote that cursed novel, the rest of the world helped me to keep you sane. Every time you've written a book, or a play, or God knows what, and considered yourself the greatest genius since Shakespeare.
Oh, no, really.
I was quite content every time that it would turn out to be your success. But thank heavens every time it turned out to be such a thorough failure that I won the battle with your megalomania. But now, this book. The only thing you ever confessed to be trash until you read the papers. Oh, what papers?
My dear woman, I may be vain, but you are making a tragic mistake.
To be married to a man for 11 years and then to be addressed like a public meeting.
A tragic mistake.
Can't you hear yourself before dying, idiot? Did you sold yourself into a sentimental novel?
Agnes, are you going on like this, or must I?
Yes, you must. You shall hear it. And don't you interrupt me. There's only one person in the world loves you in spite of what you are. And let me tell you.
You're mistaken. There is somebody in this world who loves me because of what I am.
And what are you, my darling?
Ask her.
Her?
Yes.
Oh. Who is she?
Oh, you don't know her.
Is she young? How young?
No, I'll be damned. I won't go on with this. You look like a corpse. So pale, I mean. Agnes, I'm not such a monster, but sit down. Please, Agnes, you sit.
I should face my 31st year or something.
Ordinary?
Two children. I didn't faint when Robert had the mumps, did I?
Well, don't you think this is a little different?
No, my dear. This belongs to the family medicine.
I love her.
Well, not me anymore. I don't mean as a friend, or as the mother of your children, but as a wife. You can tell me honestly, really. Is that why you've been sleeping in the study?
No, I haven't slept every week.
I see. Then it must be cook who snores.
Since when do I snore?
Not you, dear. Cook. Every night when I went down the passage.
Good night.
Sleep well.
What was that?
Sleep well.
Oh, damn it. I won't stand it. Cook snores. Agnes, I love somebody else. It's driving me crazy. You, the children, she, the children, you. For 3 weeks, I've lived through hell, and all you've got to say is cook snores.
No,
no, no. You're so damn sure of yourself, it makes me sick. Now, I know you won't believe this, but I love that woman, and I must have that woman, or I'll go mad. At last. Thank God that sign of hope. Why haven't you looked at me like that before? I have begged, implored, crawled to you for a little warmth and understanding and got nothing. Even my book that was written inspired by you, longing for you. Right from the beginning you have seen it as a rival. Whatever I did, whatever I tried, carriage, servants, money, paintings, dresses, right from the beginning, you hated that book. And now you have driven me into somebody else's arms. Somebody else. But sure, one thing at least, that you will have to share me with my work.
Does
she
understand that
you
will have to share it with other women as well?
She doesn't have to. At last, I found a woman who will live with my work, and a better guarantee of my faithfulness nobody could have.
You? Well, what
would
you do?
Well, she listens. Encourages me with a look, a touch, an encouragement. When I cheer, she cheers with me. When I meditate, she meditates with me. Haven't you understood a single word I've been trying to say? Can't you, won't you see that I've changed?
No.
Blind, 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 that's all I can say. At any rate, you've changed.
Oh,
let's not start that. No, it's senseless to torture you once I have I'm sorry if it was necessary to hurt you. It couldn't very well have done otherwise. I'm at the mercy of a feeling stronger than I.
Rotten.
Horrible.
Not all
Just to see me, either, Biff, because I love Willie. He's the dearest man in the world to me. And I won't have anyone making him feel unwanted and low and blue. Now, you've got to make up your mind now, darling. There's no leeway anymore. Either he's your father and you pay him that respect, or else you're not to come here. Oh, I know he's not easy to get along with. Nobody knows that better than me, but... Willie Loman never made a lot of money. His name was never in the papers. He's not the finest character that ever lived, but he's a human being, and a terrible thing is happening to him. So attention must be paid. He's not to be allowed to fall into his grave like an old dog. Attention must be paid to such a person. And don't you call him crazy. You don't have to be very smart to know what his trouble is. But the man is exhausted. A little man can get just as exhausted as a big man. He works for a company for 36 years this March, opens up unheard of territories to their trademark. And now, in his old age, they take his salary away and they put him on straight commission like a beginner, an unknown. When he brought the biz ball when he was young, they were glad to see him. But now his old friends, the old buyers who loved him so and always found some order to hand him in a pinch, they're all dead, retired. He used to be able to make 6-7 calls a day in Boston. Now he takes his valises out of the car and he puts them back and he takes them out again and he's exhausted. Instead of talking, he walks. He drives 700 miles, and when he gets there, no one knows him anymore. No one welcomes him. And what goes through a man's mind driving 700 miles home without having earned a cent? Why shouldn't he talk to himself? Why? When he has to go to Charlie and borrow $50 a week and pretend that that's his pay. How long can that go on? How long? You see what I'm sitting here and waiting for? And you tell me he has no character. You who never worked a day but for your own benefit. When does he get a medal for that? Is this his reward, to turn around at the age of 63 and find his sons, who he loved better than his life? One of philandering bum. That's all you are, Happy. And you, Biff, what happened to the love you had for him? You were such pals. And you used to talk to him on the phone every night. How lonely he was until he could come home to you. No, Biff, you just can't stay here and fight all the time. And last time, oh boys, it's so hard to tell you a thing like this. He's just a big, stupid man to you, but I tell you, there's more good in him than many other people. Well, I was looking for a fuse, and the lights blew out, and I went down cellar, and there was a fuse box. Behind the fuse box, it just happened to fall out as a length of rubber hose, just short. There's a little attachment on the end of it, and I knew right away. I'm sure enough. On the bottom of the water heater, there's a little nipple on the gas pipe. I'm ashamed to take it off. And I mentioned it to him. Every day I go down and I take away that little rubber hose, but when he comes home, I put it back where it was. How can I insult him that way? I don't know what to do. I live from day to day. Boy, I tell you, I know every soil is mine. It sounds so old-fashioned and silly, I know, but I tell you, he put his whole life into you boys, and you've turned your backs on him. Biff, I swear to God, Biff, his life is in your hands. Biff and Happy, in an effort to make amends, have invited their father to have dinner with them at the chop house. As Willie leaves that morning, excited about the prospects of a new job in New York, the phone rings, and Linda answers. Hello. Oh, Biff, I'm so glad you called. Yes. Sure, I told him. Yes, they'll be here for dinner. He'll be there for dinner at 6 o'clock. I didn't forget. And listen, I was just dying to tell you. You know that little rubber hose I was telling you about that he connected to the gas heater? I finally decided to go down cellar this morning and destroy it. But it's gone. Imagine, he took it away himself. It isn't there. When? Oh, then you took it. Oh, nothing. It's just I hoped he'd taken it himself. No, I'm not worried, Johnny, because this morning he left in such high spirits. It was like the old days. I'm not afraid anymore. Have a nice time with Dad tonight, darling. He may have big news, that's right, a New York job. Be sweet to him, dear. Be loving to him. Because he's only a little boat looking for a harbor. Just put your arm around him when he comes to the rest of it. Give him a big smile. That's fine. Goodbye, dear. Biff and Happy, having met two girls in the restaurant, desert their father and return home quite late to find Linda waiting for them. Where were you? Don't you care whether he lives or dies? Get out of my sight. Get out of here, and don't you dare go near your father. You invite him to dinner. He looks forward to it all day. And then you desert him there. There's no stranger that would do that. Do you have to go to women tonight? You and your lousy, rotten horse. Get out of here, both of you, and don't come back. I don't want you tormenting him anymore. Go now and get your things together and get out, you bums, you. Later, there is the sound of a car moving off at full speed. It is Willie. He does not return alive. At the cemetery, Linda speaks. Why didn't anybody come? Where are all the people you knew? Maybe they blame me. I can't understand it. At this time, especially. The first time in 35 years, we were just about free and clear. He only needed a little salary. He was even finished in the dentist. I can't understand it. You know, boys, you know what Charlie said. He said, nobody just blamed this man. You don't understand. Willie was a salesman. And for a salesman, there is no rock bottom to life. He doesn't put a bolt to a nut. He don't tell you the law and give you medicine. He's a man way out there in the blue, riding on a smile and a shoeshine. And when they stop not smiling back, there's an earthquake. And then you get yourself a couple of spots on your hat and you're finished. Nobody does blame this man. A salesman has got the dream boy. It comes with the territory. Go on, boys. I'll be with you in a minute. I want to, just for a minute, I never had a chance to say goodbye. Forgive me, dear. I can't cry. I don't know what it is, but I can't cry. I don't understand it. Why did you ever do that? Help me, Willie. I can't cry. It seems to me that you're just on another trip. I keep expecting you, Willie, dear. I can't cry. Why did you do it? I search and search and I can't understand it. I made the last payment on the house today. Today, dear. And there'll be nobody home. We're free and clear. We're free. We're free. We're free.
And as its eyes caught the gleam and flash of light, how beautiful he was with his olive-painted flesh and his dark gold wrinkles, his eyes of mingled blue and brown, his perfect little limbs, and the soft, voluptuous roll which the blood of Africa had molded into his features. I held him in my arms after we sped far away to our southern home, held him and glanced at the hot red soil of Georgia and the breathless city of 100 hills and felt a vague unrest. Why was his hair tinted with gold? An evil omen was golden hair in my life. Why had not the brown of his eyes crushed out and killed the blue? For brown were his father's eyes and his father's father's. And thus in the land of the color line, I saw as it fell across my baby, the shadow of the veil. Within the veil was he born, said I, and there within shall he live, a Negro and a Negro's son, holding it in that little head, ah, bitterly, the unbowed pride of a haunted race, clinging with that tiny dimpled hand, ah, wearily, to a hope, not hopeless, but unhopeful. And seeing with those bright, wondering eyes that peer into my soul, a land whose freedom is to us a mockery and whose liberty is a lie. I saw the shadow of the veil as it passed over my baby, and I saw the cold city towering above the blood-red land. I held my face beside his little cheek, showed him the star children and the twinkling lights as they began to flash, and stilled with an even song the unvoiced terror of my life. So sturdy and masterful he grew, so filled with bubbling life, so tremulous with the unspoken wisdom of a life, but 18 months distant from the all life, we were not far from worshiping this revelation of the divine, my wife and I. Our own life built and molded itself upon this child. He tinged her every dream and idolized her every effort. No hands but hers must touch and garnish those little limbs. No dress or frill must touch them that had not wearied her fingers. No voice but hers could coax him off to dreamland. And she and he together spoke some soft and unknown tongue, and in it held communion. I too mused above his little white bed, saw the strength of my own arm stretched onward through the ages, through the newer strength of his, saw the dream of my black father staggered to step onward in the wild phantasm of the world, heard in his baby voice of the prophet that was to rise within that veil. And so we dreamed and loved and planned by fall and winter, and the full flush of the long southern spring, till the hot winds rolled from the furtive gulf, till the roses shivered and still, and the still stern sun quivered its awful light over the hills of Atlanta. And then one night the little feet pattered wearily to the wee white bed, and the tiny hands trembled, and the warm, flushed face tossed on the pillow, and we knew that the baby was sick. 10 days he lay there, a swift week and 3 endless days, wasting away. Surely the mother nursed him the first days and laughed into the little eyes that smiled again. Tenderly she hovered round him till the smile fled away and fear crouched beside the little bed. Then the day in was hot, and the night was a dreamless terror, and joy and sleep slipped away. I heard that voice at midnight calling me from dull and dreamless trance, crying, "The shadow of death! The shadow of death! Out into the starlight I crept to rouse the grave physician, the shadow of death, the shadow of death. The hours trembled on, the night listened, the ghastly dawn glided like a tired thing across the landmark. Then we two alone looked upon the child as he turned toward us with great eyes and stretched his string-like hands, the shadow of death. And we spoke no word and turned away. He died at eventide, when the sun lay like a brooding sorrow above the western hills, veiling its face. When the wind spoke not of the trees, the great green trees he loved stood motionless. I saw his breath beat quicker and quicker, pause, and then his little soul leapt like a star that traveled in the night and left a world of darkness in its trail. The day changed not, the same tall trees peeped in at the windows, the same green grass blended in the setting sun. Only in the chamber of death lived the world's most piteous thing, a childless mother. I shirk not, I long for work, I pant for a life full of striving, I am no coward to shrink before the rugged rush of the storm, nor even quail before the awful shadow of the veil. But hearken, O death, is not this my life hard enough? Is not that dull land that stretches webs around me cold enough? Is not all the world beyond these four little walls pitiless enough? But that thou must needs enter here, O death, above my head the thundering storm beat like a heartless voice, and the crazy forest pulsed with the curses of the weak. But what cared I within my home beside my wife and my baby boy? Wast thou so jealous of one little coin of happiness that thou must needs enter here, O death? A perfect life is his, all joy and love, with tears to make it brighter, sweet as the summer's day beside the house. The world loved him, the women kissed his curls, the men looked gravely into his wonderful eyes. The children hovered and fluttered about him. I can see him now, changing like the sky from sparkling laughter to darkening frowns, and then to wondering thoughtfulness as he watched the world. He knew no color line, poor dear, and the veil, though it shadowed him, had not yet darkened half his sun. He loved the white matron, and he loved his black nurse, and in his little world walked souls alone, uncolored and unclothed. I, yea, all men are larger and purer by the infinite breadth of that one little life. She who in simple clearness of vision sees beyond the stars, said when he had flown, he will be happy there. He ever loved beautiful things. And I, far more ignorant and blind by the web of my own weaving, sat alone, winding words and muttering, if still he be, and he be there, let him be happy, O fate. Light was the warning of his burial, the bird in song and sweet smelling flowers. The trees whispered to the grass, but the children sat with hushed faces and yet seemed a ghostly, unreal day. The reason light. We seemed to rumble down an unknown street behind a little white bundle of posies with the shadow of a song in our ears. The busy city dinned about us. They did not say much, those pale-faced, hurrying men and women. They did not say much. They only glanced and said, niggers. We could not lay under the ground there in Georgia, for the earth there is strangely red. So we bore him away to the northward with his flowers and his little folded hands. In vain, in vain, for where, O God, beneath the broad blue sky, shall my dark baby rest in peace? where reverence dwells and goodness and a freedom that is free. All that day, all that night, there set an awful gladness in my heart. Nay, blame me not if I see the world thus darkly through the veil, and my soul whispers over me, saying, not dead, not dead, but escaped. Not bond, but free. No bitter meanness shall now sicken his baby heart, till it die a living death. No taunt shall madden his happy boyhood. Fool that I was to think or wish that this little soul should grow choked or deformed within the veil. I might have known that yonder deep, unworldly look that ever anon floated past his eyes were peering far beyond this narrow path. And the poise of his curl-crowned head, did there not sit all the wild pride of being which his father had hardly crushed in his own heart? For what pursuit shall a Negro want with pride amid the studied humiliation of 40 million fellows? Well fed, my boy, before the world has dubbed your ambition, insolence, and held your ideals unattainable. Taught you to cringe and to bow. Better for this nameless void that stops my life than a sea of sorrow for you. Idle words, he might have borne his burden more bravely than we, and found it lighter too. Someday, surely this is not the end. Surely there shall yet dawn some mighty morning to lift the veil and set the prisoner free. Not for me, I shall die in my bonds, but for fresh young souls who have not known the night and wakened to the morning, a morning when men ask of the workman, not is he white, but can he work? When men ask artists, not are they black, but do they know? Some morning, this may be long, long years to come. But now there wails on the dark shore within the veil the same deep voice, thou shalt forego. And all I have foregone at that command, and with small complaint, all save that fair young form that lies so coldly wed with death in the nest I have built. If one must have gone, why not I? Why may I not rest from this restlessness and sleep from this wide awakening? Was not the world's alembic time in his young hand? And is not my time waning? There are so many workers in the vineyard that the fair promise of this little boy could lightly come to